16 million colors. Bring some havoc in your head.
Greetings, junkies and loyal disciples of Sagata Sanshiro. We are here with an update following the E3 madness, and so we wanted to follow up with some more details and more thoughts, and there's been some amazing announcements in the Sega space, and so we want to just take a little bit of time to delve into that here. And by we, I am referring to three of us, a collection of people from both the Saturn Junkyard Titancast and the Sega Saturn Shiro podcast. And today I welcome Patrick from Shiro. How are you doing, sir?
Doing amazing. How about you guys?
Well, it's a little early for me, but pretty good otherwise. How about you, Nuno?
It's past midday for me, so I'm ready to go.
And I'm Brian from the Titancast. So thank you all for joining us. So for a little context here, we recorded a Saturn Junkyard Titancast episode right before E3 that was our attempt to kind of catch up on a lot of the announcements and developments and other things that had come about that were either Sega-specific or Sega-adjacent. And I think we were, we ended up being pretty robust with that, and we talked about pretty much everything we would have wanted to cover. However, in the intervening days, E3 has happened, and we've seen just that many more announcements come about. And so we really felt that it was worth following up and speaking to those a bit as well. So that's kind of where we're at here, and that's why we are recording this today. So, I think we can kick this off with the biggest news, particularly for Saturn fans.
Cyberpunk 2077, woo!
Keanu Reeves!
No.
No, you're breathtaking. No? Okay.
We're all breathtaking.
You're all breathtaking. He's like the Oprah of E3 conferences, maybe.
The web browser or the host?
Is that Oprah or Oprah? I don't know. Oprah.
I call it Oprah.
Oh, all right. Anyway, yeah.
Imagine we want to start with Shenmue.
Well, no. My first question for both of you is how many? And we'll get to Shenmue. I don't think we need to lead on that. But my first question for both of you is how many times have you watched the Panzer Dragoon remake trailer?
Too many times. I think I'm on like 13 plays on YouTube.
So, for those who may not know, they had announced towards the end of 2018, the company Forever Entertainment announced that they had been given the rights to develop remakes to both Panzer Dragoon, the original, and Panzer Dragoon Zwei. And so at E3, a few days ago as we record this, ended up showing their progress on that project, or at least the remake of the first game. And so they announced, they had about a minute-long trailer that kind of went through and showed it seemed like almost all that footage was from the first level of the original game. And it just kind of showed the updated visuals and a little bit of the gameplay snippets. And they announced that it's going to be released for the Switch this winter. And I think other sources seem to suggest this will be winter 2019. So at the end of this year. The other aspect of this is they previously announced it for Xbox One and PS4. So I really think that it'll be released. I assume it'll be released on everything simultaneously, but Nintendo did make a point to show it at their Switch Nintendo Direct during E3, so they kind of got drew a little more attention to that. And honestly, I kind of like the idea that it's a Switch game, and that's probably how I'll play it ultimately, but just want to open it up and get your guys' thoughts on the fact that exists and how it looks.
I remember we actually talked about it. Was it the one, not the last one, but the Titancast before? The one in January, I think. That's the one, right?
Yeah, that was... In fact, that was only like two episodes ago, since we've
okay.
Yeah.
So that I was saying how excited I was for that one, and I'm surprised that we got anything like anything at E3 at all. I thought it was basically, oh, here it's coming, winter 2020 or whatever. So I thought we were just gonna be like see a little trailer, but I'm surprised it's gonna be this year though. But I'm kind of more surprised there wasn't really anything playable at E3 for that. Usually if it's coming out this year, it should be at least have some playable demo, but maybe they need to do some hard work on it before they can really drop anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a closed doors thing as well. I mean, I know sometimes they like to show some curated gameplay footage and just package that as the representation of progress on the project, but also for other people, give them, or for in the media and other industry types, give them a little more of a sense of how that's actually playing. But, you know, that's just conjecture. What do you think, Nuno?
Well, first of all, let's all remember that back last year, in the beginning of the year, I made a video for our channel, which at the time was the biggest and most well-researched and most in-depth video that I have ever done at that point, which is called Panzer Dragoon Retrospective and Comparison, because it's basically a technical rundown of the how it plays on every platform that it has been released, the original Panzer Dragoon, so that's Saturn, PC, PS2, Xbox, all of those. And back then, I mentioned how really beautiful the PS2 version looked, because it was an enhanced version. It wasn't just a simple port. It had some graphical enhancements to it. And back then, I commented on how beautiful it looked and that it was really the time for a full-on, blown-out Panzer Dragoon remake. I called it first, guys, okay? I asked it, Sega listened, and then made it. Okay, it's all because of me.
They obviously heard Nuno and were like, oh man, this Nuno guy is making some good points. Hurry up, let's get the marketing department to get another company to make a remake. Come on, let's get on this, guys.
Well, that must have been it, because otherwise how can you explain that all of a sudden?
Exactly.
That must have been it. So no need to thank me. I just want to do everything I can for the community. So that's it. Then, Brian, just...
We do need to buy him some trophies and get him a little... what's that thing, like the sash that says Saturn Man or whatever he wants?
That's not a bad idea. You can...
The Saturn Oracle.
Yeah.
So, Brian, you just asked what was our reactions. Actually, how many times had we watched the Panzer Dragoon video? So... do you guys remember a couple of weeks ago or a month ago? I don't know. That guy that became sort of famous or infamous on the internet, the guy who watched the trailer for the new Star Wars movie and he got so emotional that he cried his eyes out on live on YouTube, and a lot of people made fun of him, and then a lot of people jumped in his defense saying that, well, I wish I was as excited as this guy for anything, because I'm dead inside and I can't feel anything anymore. Do you guys remember that guy?
I missed that whole development, but
yeah, I didn't see that one, but I kind of know what you're going with, because I kind of felt that same way. Like, I felt choked up. Like, I wasn't like crying like on my desk like with tears in my eyes, but it was like I was like actually choking up, and it was like, whoa, this is actually happening. This is this game I played on the Saturn so many times, and this awesome gameplay. It's like, whoa, I'm getting choked up about it.
Yeah, I didn't full-on cry. But back then I actually made fun of that guy because I'm a terrible human being and I like to kill the joys of others. But karma is a bitch and it comes around, and now it was my time to get really emotional watching a damn trailer, because goddamn, it looks so beautiful. Like, goddamn, it's real, it's happening, it looks amazing, and I just can't wait to play it, because I goddamn, I love Panzer Dragoon, and after making that video last year, I know the first level by heart. So actually, speaking about the game, I noticed that the level layout, a lot of the scenes seem to be just literally straight adapted from the original game. So just scene by scene. Some of those level elements seem to be copied straight from the original, but others look brand new. I mean, it could just be the enhanced graphics that give it a different look, but I don't think so. I think they actually redone the levels. They probably reused some of the more iconic, areas of the levels, but they seem to have made some new areas as well, some new locales for the levels, you know, which is cool. I mean, we deserve a few surprises. It shouldn't be literally the same game, in my opinion. So no, the same exact game, that wouldn't be bad, but having some surprises for diehard fans, old school fans like us, I think it could be really, really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sort of feeling the same way. One of the reactions, actually, it's kind of funny. After I saw the trailer, I was so happy, but I had people on my friends list say, "Oh man, that trailer was really underwhelming," and like saying, "Oh, it's like not really that impressive." And it's like, I explained to them, I mean, maybe for you it's not, but like people have been waiting for any Panzer stuff for 18 plus years, 17 plus years, whenever the Orta came out. And it's like,
yeah, people, 2003.
Yeah, so people have been like dried, like there's nothing. So anything at this point, anything that looks even decent is like fine and people are happy with in the Panzer thing. But he's like saying, oh, well, it should be, I mean, if you want people to play the game and be successful, it's like, I mean, I kind of can see that, like maybe, but I don't know what else you could have shown, like what had the dragon come out and like start talking. I really couldn't understand that. I don't know if maybe you guys like felt the same way or got the same reaction from people.
Would they have used Keanu Reeves for that voice?
They should have. Oh, also, I saw another funny thing. I saw was somebody did a petition to change the dragon voice to the original one from the original game. So hashtag save Panzer Dragoon, whatever the dragon thing is.
I don't know. I feel like that might be a bit much, you know, and to be fair, and just to add a little more context to this, because I do think the developer expounded upon this a little bit, or at least mentioned it in a Twitter post, and that they did have to recreate everything from scratch. I mean, there's no source code that went into this remake. So everything that they depict on screen is going to be kind of their own brand new interpretation of that game, and both its audio and visual assets are all going to be made from scratch. So I'm just a little jaded at this point, but it's kind of wearing on me, this sentiment within a lot of retro communities and as part of the swell of backlash for a lot of these projects, that things aren't exactly as we remember or aren't exactly faithful to the most superficial aspects of what these things were. And Nuno, you did a good job describing this in, I think, the last episode, or maybe when we talked about Panzer Dragoon previously. But at the end of the day, it's really about moving forward with that, with the vision behind it, and capturing the spirit of what that game was, rather than trying to be a one-to-one recreation, because, you know, it's been a while since that game came out. There's going to be aspects of it that are either difficult or make less sense to recapture as they were, and to a certain extent we have to expect and accept that things are going to evolve, and it's not going to be the exact same thing. Otherwise, we might as well just play the Saturn game, which I, to be fair, I will do happily anyway.
Yeah, I think people are just sort of like expecting one-to-one everything. It's like, I mean, it would be nice, but like, guys, they're not throwing the Saturn port into a volcano in every copy of it. I mean, it'll still be there if you really want to play it. I mean, I just think the remake is a good way to get new fans into it and have anything, just some newer way to play it and a new way to experience Panzer Dragoon. And if it's slightly different, or, you know, a level's different, or there's more levels, I mean, I would be fine with that.
And also, I that kind of leads me to the fact that this was announced at Nintendo's press conference or their Nintendo Direct. And I think that was really interesting because as a Switch game, I could see a unique opportunity for a game like this, particularly when you'd have to imagine a lot of people who are Nintendo fans are maybe clamoring for something in the vein of a traditional Star Fox game. And so for Nintendo to make a point to show this, I think that does have some potential to appeal to those people. And really strike that chord to be like, oh yeah, you know what? There were other games doing this too. And even if you'd never heard of it and didn't even know Panzer Dragoon existed, at least, you know, here's this game. It is an on-rail shooter. They showed that gameplay explicitly. I mean, I think to somebody who wasn't familiar with the original could see that and really draw those parallels immediately. And I think the evocative interpretation of the visual style and everything just made it all really pop in a way that I thought was pretty appealing. And I'm hoping newer fans would find appealing as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to wait and see what happens when that drops. Hopefully in winter. I mean, you know, we don't know yet. Games can be delayed, you know, and usually are. But I don't know. I mean, if it's as complete as it looks, hopefully we'll be able to put this in our hands and do some streams on the Junkyard or the Shiro pages.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. No,
Brian, I think you just made a really good point about the appeal of the game. Because unlike the other long-awaited Sega game that we're going to talk about, that starts with an S and ends in a 3, I think Panzer Dragoon really has the potential to appeal to an immensely large base of gamers because it's the first one in the series. It's a remake of the first one, so there's you're not going to start in the middle of a long epic story. It's a beautiful game in terms of graphics. I think it's colorful and it's so fast-paced. I think if you pass by someone who's playing, I think you're going to want to stop and take a second look, because it really grabs your attention. It's an action game that you can jump right into it. There are no difficult, complex controls to learn. It's just pick up and play. And even if you have never heard of Panzer Dragoon before, obviously I can't really put myself in that position because I'm a huge nerd for Panzer Dragoon. But I imagine that maybe even someone who has never heard of the series could look at this game and feel the inclination to try it and to play it. I think it looks fun even for someone who doesn't know the series.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting about this, and I'll go back to the Switch a bit, is that at least more than any other modern console I can think of, platform, it has really had a kind of a renaissance of shooters in general, both 2D shmups, vertical, horizontal. And I think, you know, it makes sense that this might appeal to other people who may enjoy those aspects of the Switch as well. So, you know, I'm hoping that there's at least some avenues for new people to come into this franchise. And I do think the trailer that Forever Entertainment put forth at least puts them in a pretty good position to do that. And also one thing I noticed, this is a little, or I think minor, and I can't remember exactly how it compares to the original off the top of my head, but I really liked that they kind of had everything drenched in kind of a sunset dusk hue. And I don't remember the original version of that stage leaning into that as much. I thought that was kind of an interesting difference, but I think really it made a huge impact on maybe the appeal, you know, of just the visual style.
Would be cool if it would be like a real time thing where you can play it depending on the time of the day where you're playing it. You could play it at night or at day or at dusk. I just have like that. That'd be a cool dynamic for that game if they decide to implement that, though.
Oh, so like the Metropolis Street Racer feature?
Yeah, except it actually works.
I think it kind of works.
I'm only joking.
The nighttime graphics were a little tough, depending on your display. Yeah. But I mean, I like that idea though. Like, you know, just the novelty, even though there's not really a practical reason that that kind of feature needs to exist. The fact that Sega, you know, has built a lineage of just so many different forward thinking, crazy innovations like that, that were maybe a bit superfluous in some sense, but at the same time had a novelty and a charm that in hindsight made them unique and interesting and helped define how I view Sega today. And I can't think of any better example of that mentality than Shenmue. Of course at E3 of EaseNet and Yu Suzuki, they unveiled quite a few details about Shenmue 3, which is now slated for a November release, at least for the time being. Do either of you want to open us up and talk about that?
Yeah, so I guess after all these years of waiting, after all these years of waiting for the game Shenmue 3 to be announced, and then it being announced and all the years of waiting for the game to be released, we're finally might get a release in November, after we got the August release date and they pushed back to November?
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. There's a lot of cool announcements regarding that and a lot of stuff at E3 for that. Like Adam Korolek was posting pictures. There's a giant banner right when you walk in. Or there's a Ryo on the stairs, like his face. There's a lot of stuff going on. Apparently, there's a lot of stuff. Like he was hanging with Yu Suzuki, and Yu Suzuki was apparently around there. There's playable demos of it.
I saw footage from that actually.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool stuff with that, and it's kind of weird seeing Shenmue 3 at E3 when everyone's been saying, "Oh, it's a niche game. No one's gonna play it, and you know, no one would care if it came out." And now we have all the stuff at E3, and we have all this stuff online, and it's really cool that this game that people consider niche is not really as niche as they've been led to believe in a way. I mean, I guess maybe if you consider hundreds of thousands niche, maybe, but I don't know. I wouldn't consider that really niche.
Yeah, I think it depends. I mean, you know, retro in general, that community is maybe less niche than it used to be. Although, to be fair, it's easy for us to have that perception just because we live in that bubble. And so we see the fervor that comes up and we experience that firsthand. And so maybe the common, person who's just there at E3 for any other purpose, who's also in the games but didn't necessarily grow up with the Sega or Shenmue specifically. I mean, I think maybe it was probably good for them to have some of that advertising to try to draw more attention to that effort. The other aspect of visibility here is that they had featured the new trailer in, I think, the PC Gaming Show on one of the first weekends, or the sorry, mm-hmm. one of the first days of the convention. And so, you know, I do also wonder how much of the attention it got might have been a bit muddled because there were some controversial aspects of that, and not least of which was that it would be an Epic Store exclusive. As somebody who doesn't really game on or play games on a PC that much, and also doesn't really have that much of a problem with downloading things and buying things on different storefronts, I don't feel like I am that informed or impacted by this. I don't really care personally, but I also don't have a lot of skin in that game. And so I'd be curious to hear from either of you guys or both of you guys what you think that means and whether that's actually, you know, what's behind that.
All right. So I think one of the things that I just want to point out before we start is that they actually announced that it would be coming to Steam a little later on. So it looks like it's just exclusive, you know, first release of it.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they do have the Steam page and they kept that up also.
Yeah, and they also said that that after E3 that they saw the backlash and they're going to be addressing it. So there's still a lot that has left in it, but I guess for everyone that doesn't know, there's this huge this huge backlash against people that aren't really happy with the Epic Store, whether it be some controversies in the past, some issues with their sales stuff, and I guess one of the big ones that is that there's like the spyware thing, but I'm not 100% in that, and I think for the most part that was all sorted out and it's fine now. One of the things I think it's a bit silly now after all these controversies to be worrying about that. I mean, we've gone from, you know, wanting games on the PC to wanting it on launchers, and it's like, I mean, as long as the game launches, I mean, it's what, a few megabytes, like what, 80 to maybe like 300 tops for the launcher. And it's like, it's just like one extra launcher you have, just like click on it and make it up and go. I mean, I guess maybe it might make it hard if you want to interact with your Steam friends, but I mean, Shenmue is really a single player experience. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to lose all those Steam friends when you want to play on the Epic Store. I mean, it's just a single player game. Not to mention, I think one of the big reasons they went for it was the bigger revenue that they can get on their end. Because Steam takes more off the top for developers. And Epic Store sort of gives more to the developers than Steam, I think like over like 10% or something like that, or some, I don't know the exact number, but they give them a bigger revenue split. So I think that's probably one of the reasons they want to use the Epic Store to begin with. So a lot of stuff like broke out in the junkyard and stuff about that. But for the most part, I think it's a bit silly, and it's like just a launcher, and you know, it's coming to Steam. So I think people just need to like chill out, but you know, that's just me.
Well, you basically covered everything I was going to say. I honestly think it's just whiny people being whiny or just complaining because they have nothing better to do in their lives. I mean, seriously, it's, as you said, it's just a different launcher. I could understand the asshole if the PC landscape was just Steam. I could understand, well, I've used Steam for all of these years and now I have to use something else. But we have had to use other launchers for a long time. I mean, first it was publishers making their own storefronts, like Electronic Arts with Origin, Ubisoft with Uplay, even Bethesda now lately, more recently. So it's not like nowadays you can be a PC gamer and just have Steam. You can't, unless you only play certain games. You can't. I mean, you just have to deal with different storefronts and different launchers. That's just part of the PC landscape nowadays. But for some reason that I really don't understand, people just went ballistic when it came to the Epic Games launcher, mostly with games being temporary exclusives, because that was part of their strategy. And that was something that really, really made people mad. It's Epic buying temporary exclusivity for games only appearing on the store for some months before eventually being released on Steam. And back then, when Shenmue 3 was announced, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm misremembering, but if I remember correctly, back when Shenmue 3 was announced, they only promised that it would come to PC. They didn't specify a specific storefront. So
there was actually a box that said Steam compatible or compatibility with Steam or something like that. But also it said next to it that the requirements can change, will are subject to change, course. And then, Epic Store didn't exist in 15, so it's not like they could have predicted that it would be on that store and they give them a bigger revenue split.
Yeah, okay, if that's the case, maybe I can see just a little bit of reason for the people who are complaining. But still, I mean, it's on the same platform. It's not like you have to buy anything new for your PC, like a new piece of hardware or something like that. It's literally just create a new user account and download a new launcher. That's it. And you're going to play the game the same way. As you mentioned, Patrick, if it was a multiplayer game, we could understand people having their friends list on Steam and the hassle that it would bring to play together with your friends on a new platform. But that's not the case because Shenmue 3 is single player. Really, the only hassle you're going to have is to create a new user account, which is something that we do almost every week. We have to register on new sites or whatever, or new apps, and download a small launcher, and that's it. So I just can't sympathize with drama, the controversy, because I really don't think there's anything to really be that mad about. I mean, it could be a bit of a hassle, but that's it. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that kind of reminds me of, what was it I was watching? I think it was at the Jimquisition, but I think his point about this was kind of the precedent that it sets in undermining the credibility of Kickstarter projects and crowdfunding in general, and that when you have a effort that's built on needing the fans to move forward, but then eventually drives more money from additional investors or like, you know, Deep Silver or other publishers who come in later and then kind of change the terms of what that game was originally sold on, including the platforms that that people who originally contributed to those crowdfunding campaigns were expecting, that there's a little gray area there. And then on top of that, you know, maybe there's a sense of, I guess, a perception of greediness that when you then, after getting double dipping in those revenue sources, taking it to, and then on the PC side, getting whatever cut that I got to imagine maybe Epic probably just outright subsidized a huge amount of that and kind of promised them some stability in revenue just by a simple licensing fee so they could at least get the game on their platform first and ensure that the people who wanted to play it at launch had to go through Epic to do it, at least on PC. Like, you know, I think there may be a sense that they undersold or oversold maybe the actual need for revenue or for that funding from fans to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the way it sort of goes nowadays, is that where they have the Kickstarter to get that initial money, and then once they're able to get more money and make more deals, they can, because, I don't know, I mean, developing a game isn't as simple as asking for X amount of money and only using that money.
Especially for indie developers, and especially for a game this complicated and this, you know, massive as a Shenmue sequel. I mean, I don't see really, you know, maybe there was no way to do it other than try to cobble together as many different streams as possible.
I gotcha. And I just think that people need to understand the risk when they kickstart a game that, you know, you're in basically an investor, like you're putting money towards a game. I mean, a lot of investors that do similar things don't really, I mean, they get revenue cuts back and per se, but, you know, this one, you just get stuff back, I guess. So, and even with any investment, there's always a risk of the project not coming out or not not being good, as we've seen from many Kickstarters like Mighty No. 9 and a very, very, very many of those. But yeah, I definitely can see people's concerns in that regard. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. And out of all the things that really happened on Kickstarter, I think changing the PC requirements and making have another launcher is probably the less intrusive I've seen on Kickstarter. So I don't think I really don't think it's too bad, but you know, maybe there's more behind it that I'm not seeing, that I'm probably ignorant about. So yeah, we'll just have to see once the game drops and get more info comes out. But yeah, did you guys want to move on to the actual, like, the collector's edition of the game that was announced?
Yeah,
I
was actually going to bring that up. Yeah, I was going to bring that up next, because I actually don't really know what's in there. So yeah, feel free to enlighten us.
Yeah, so Limited Run Games had their own little press conference where they announced the death of the Vita, a couple other cool games coming out, like Power Rangers collector's editions, and they asked,
bunch of Star Wars games too.
Yeah. Yeah, but one of the things they announced was the Shenmue 3 limited edition that they're working on distributing for Usenet, which is going to be a giant box that's going to have I think some art pages, a shadow box of like the scene of Shenmue, Ryu Hizuki fighting, and the actual mirrors that are in the game. So, you know, if you want to reenact that scene, like have some guy come to your house and beat up your dad and take the mirrors and yell, "Father!" I mean, you can do that. That's a possibility for you now.
Oh, I'm sure somebody's already done it with their own DIY crafted stone mirrors.
Hopefully they didn't have to kill their father to reenact that, though.
Well, you got to be faithful to the original.
It's fair enough, but yeah, no, the collector's edition looked pretty cool. It's a nice little box, but they didn't really announce anything besides the fact that they're doing it and what's in it. So there's been no pre-orders. There's no prices on it. It's like, oh, here's the collector's edition. Yay.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily feel the need to get that. I mean, I had already pledged for the initial Kickstarter and got the PS4 standard edition. And honestly, like, I feel like that's probably good enough. I don't really see a need to have more stuff. Honestly, I feel like that's the collector's edition thing, and more power to people that want that and have sentimental attachment to those things and get that value out of it. But I don't know, at this point, I guess I just haven't been paying attention. So, but yeah, I'm glad that they at least released it or announced it for whoever's interested.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just worried about all these collector's editions, because literally at E3, there's like four games I wanted with four different collector's editions. So like I there was the Cyberpunk collector's edition I had to pass on. There was the Death Stranding one. There's the Shenmue one, and then of course the Final Fantasy one. That's like $330 for the figurine and everything.
Good God!
So it's like I don't really have the money or the room for all these collector's editions. So I had to, I have to limit it. So I got the Final Fantasy collector's edition, but I'm kind of weary on if I want to get the Death Stranding one right now, because I don't know what I would be doing with the baby and that little carrying case. I don't think I can really display that prominently anywhere, because that'd be just kind of creepy if you didn't know the context.
Yeah, for like anybody who isn't a Kojima fan to come into your house and be like, that's something.
Man,
want to see my baby?
Even if you know the context, it's still creepy as fuck.
Yes. So I'm still debating if I should cancel and just go with the regular deluxe edition, because it's like I don't have that much room in my house, and I don't even have a room. And it's like, I don't know, do I really need it? But it's also Death Stranding, so I don't know. I'm still juggling if I should even get it or not. Or the I mean, I'm getting the game, but the collector's edition, like the giant box thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll let you guys know.
Cool. Yeah, definitely keep us posted. I'd be curious to see, I don't know, just like the build quality and how that stuff all comes in. But, you know, I think I've only like purchased, those kinds of collector's editions a couple of times. I think I got the Sonic Mania one with the big plastic Sonic on the Genesis, the fake Genesis that doesn't function as a real Genesis, which if it did, that would be pretty badass. And then I got, the Fallout 4, the Pip-Boy edition. And honestly, in the case of either of those, like, I just don't, they weren't that worth it to me. And I probably don't think I ever would have bought them if I wasn't just an impulsive, like, oh, I gotta have that because that looks crazy, I need it, kind of, if I didn't have that kind of drive. Because otherwise, they're still in the box now, or I put them back in the box. I don't really even show them off, and I don't really see that as part of the value for me. Also, for a limited space, but even if I did have the space, I don't know if I would prioritize showing those kinds of things or displaying those kinds of things over, I don't know. I mean, I have so many books and games and other stuff that are in boxes already. Like, I'd probably put that stuff on the shelf before those collector's editions.
Yeah, so it's just an overabundance of that. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I'm kind of weary even getting like one of them, let alone all four. But, I don't know.
Yeah. And the other aspect of this is that there are artists and people who also build or who create, statuettes and other things that you can, buy to pay homage to these things that we love. So, if you don't necessarily get the official collector's edition. It's kind of cool to see what else is out there and what projects people are working on help that you could buy to help celebrate your fandom of those games in other ways as well.
Yeah, you don't have to get a giant collector's edition to be a true fan. You can just get regular editions and get, like he said, statues, or like me with Death Stranding, buy a $300 necklace because you're crazy like I am. But, you know, that's a different story. Or you can buy the set, what is it, the $2,700 Final Fantasy watch?
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, they announced like these two watches, like this white and black versions of the Final Fantasy VII watch for a small amount of $2,700, you know, reasonable money.
Dang.
I was reading up on the watch that you mentioned because I hadn't heard about that before. I didn't follow DZ3 with much attention, so a lot of things passed completely by me. So you mentioned the watch, and I just had to check it out because I'm a huge watch nerd, so I had to see what that was all about. And from what I'm seeing, it's made by Seiko, which is one of the big Japanese watchmakers. They actually produce many really affordable watches. They have like the Seiko 5 line, which usually retails for between $70 to $100. So, but they also make the Prestige series, and the Grand Seikos, which can go for really thousands of dollars. So I was just checking this watch. And I don't know what movement it's going to have, if it's one of the same caliber of the Grand Seikos and the Presage series, which I doubt because it's a chronograph. So I have no idea why it's going to cost so much. I mean, for this kind of money, you can buy yourself, even just speaking of chronographs, you can probably buy yourself something like an Omega Speedmaster in second hand for between $1,000 and $2,000, which is just an incredible watch with an amazing history. So goddamn, even a watch geek like me, even if I had this kind of money, which I don't, but even if I had, goddamn, I wouldn't buy this. There are so many amazing watches that
just to put into perspective, the Metal Gear Solid 5 watch that was made by Wired, the same company as Seiko, released that watch for $375. And when Death Stranding was announced, they also announced a watch, which is only, I don't know who it's by, but it was only like $330. So,
yeah, I mean that's much more reasonable. And even then, it's a bit expensive. I mean, you can buy, just going with famous Seiko models, you could buy Alpinista Sarv 017 for between $400 and $500. So even then, it's a bit pricey, but it's much more reasonable than this. I mean, goddamn.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm all for markups for, like, you know, products and you know product placement stuff like Metal Gear or Death Stranding. But come on, $2,700. But we probably should take this offline a little bit and sort of move on to the
That's all right. All I can say is the heart wants what the heart wants, and if that includes a $2,700 collector's edition watch, well then, yeah, damn, of course. Before we take off here, I just wanted to really just touch on the game itself because we did get a new trailer. That seemed to be a little more cinematic and action sequences, some of which I assume it was showing off the QTEs. Had a couple of environmental set piece highlights, which was pretty interesting. And then in addition to that, there was a playable gameplay demo, apparently. I watched footage of it. It looked pretty brief, but it was pretty interesting, or at least it was a surprise to me that they were featuring that, and so that was kind of interesting to watch. Did you guys manage to catch any of that, and do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I was watching a little bit, and it actually looks quite good. I mean, I remember we saw like some of those awful screenshots like earlier on, but And I actually like the way it looks. It looks really beautiful. The gameplay looks, you know, classic Shenmue. And yeah, I think it looks really great, and I'm really excited to really get my hands on this game, which I think if I don't beat the first two, I'll have to play the third one without playing the first two, unfortunately. But we'll see. But yeah, no, I'm really excited for the game, and I think if it lives up to the anything like the other two, even if it's like almost the exact same gameplay and style, I think I'd be happy for it. But I think they're going to do a lot more improvements on the game by then. But you know, it looks great. It looks like it could fit right into like the Yakuza series almost in terms of visual style.
What do you think, Nuno?
Well, I haven't watched the latest trailer. Sorry, just I'm really missing out. As I just said, I didn't follow up these E3, so I can't comment on it.
Well, I mean, not even specifically the what was shown at E3, but just maybe the project in general. I know it's been a little bit since we discussed it, so.
Oh, just Shenmue 3 in general.
Yeah, well, sure.
I don't know, man. I think, first of all, I'm just really, really glad it's happening, because for a long time, me and I think most Shenmue fans, we just thought, well, that's it. We're never going to see the end of the story. We're never going to get another one. So I'm just really, really happy that it's going to be a thing. Of course, I want it to be great, but I also want to kind of temper my expectations a little bit, because 1 and 2, they came out one right after the other, and I didn't play them at launch, but I played them maybe, I don't know, less than 10 years after they came out, maybe 5 or 6 years after they came out. So it's been even longer since then. And just gaming in general kept evolving and changing, and I don't know, I think those games in a way were a bit somewhat like relics of their time. I don't think they're dated. I wouldn't say that, but I think they have a specific style of gameplay. Well, let me just be blunt. I tried playing the remastered, the HD version of Shenmue 1, and I played it for maybe half an hour, and then I quit. Maybe it's because I just wasn't in the right mood, or maybe because I didn't even plan on beating it again. I just wanted to, I don't know, get back into that universe for a little bit, but I wasn't planning on playing it to the end. But whatever the case, I found it a bit hard to get into it. Back when I first played it, I was expecting a game like no other, and I was prepared for somewhat of a learning curve when it came to controls and the structure of the game and stuff like that. And I don't know if I have that patience left in me anymore. If I'm not hooked up in the first 5 or 10 minutes, I find it really hard nowadays to give a game a second chance or put in the effort, because there's so much stuff going on with my life that if I can't get immediately into a game, I find it hard to justify the mental effort of maybe I'm just getting old and it's hard to learn new stuff. Or get used to new things. I don't know. Whatever the case, I'm really happy it's happening and I'm going to play it. But at the same time, I'm afraid it might be kind of a bittersweet experience. You know what I mean? I think the game might require a degree of attention and patience that I'm not completely sure I still have in me. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Fair enough. Yeah, I was just looking at some video of that, and I kind of take a little bit of what I said back, because I saw Ryo's eyes when he's talking. He kind of looks, I don't know if maybe he has like a stoic look to begin with. I'm trying to capture, because like he was just like talking, and his eyebrows and rest of his face wasn't moving at all, but you know. I'm not sure if that might be just trying to capture that style.
I mean, I think I have to imagine that some of that is intentional. They realized, I mean, they knew that the original, at least by today's standards, and even back then, was stilted and awkward and maybe robotic. And I think Ryo exemplifies that stoicism in his personality, but also in his animations. And so I don't think that is something that EaseNet was really that keen on changing at this point, because that's just part of the presentation style of that game. So, maybe that's intentional, and maybe they just didn't see enough value, or not even value, but it would have taken more effort to take Rio specifically in a new direction, because it would have required, I think, instilling him with more charisma than the character ever had before. And so I think it just makes sense that they make him a robot.
I gotcha. Well, I guess we'll see when it drops. Hopefully there's not really too much complaints, but like I can understand it, but I think a lot of people they're just picking it up, might not, and might make fun of it for that. It's like, oh, who looks like a robot? So it's like, we'll have to see. But you know.
Maybe that's the biggest plot twist of all time.
Oh, man. His face comes off. It's like all the circuitry and stuff. And he's a snatcher this entire time.
He was a robot all along.
Rio the Replicant.
Oh, that's a good reference.
My thoughts on this are complicated, both for the original Shenmue and Shenmue 3. Just to fill people in, the trailer that they showed, not even the trailer, the gameplay demo, it was just a small slice of it, so I don't know if there was much to glean. So to be very fair to the game, or as fair as I can be at this point, it isn't really, I wouldn't treat it as a representative sample of what that experience is going to be like, but they showed essentially Rio. He was at like a village he was in the small opening village, I assume, and it depicted a riverfront, and then along the riverfront were a variety of gambling stands. So I think the demo is purposed to show off some of the mechanics, or just show that, hey, we're bringing back Lucky Hit, we're bringing back the dice games, we're introducing a couple of new things. There was turtle racing. That's the thing that surprised me the most, that you can literally bet on a turtle. And then I think there's button prompts during the race. It's just a small like pen. There's four turtles. You pick one, and then they have to race to the end of the pen in a straight line. And so it looked like there were button prompts that you're supposed to hit to time the turtle's movement, but also not like exhaust it. That looked kind of interesting, I guess. But everything else, I was just surprised at how familiar it all was. And in some ways I feel conflicted, because I think that just runs very counter to what made the original Shenmue so special to me to begin with, and that's the fact that it did everything possible to not be like any other game that ever existed. And so at this point, you know, with a project like Shenmue 3, it's hard, or maybe even impossible to take it out of that shadow. But I do think, Nuno, you're right. You have to adjust expectations, because it's not bankrolled by the same budget and vision and enthusiasm and just, you know, sheer ambition that drove the original and made it such an iconic game for a lot of us. And when I think about like what made that game amazing, you know, there's just so much in terms of how it redefined interactivity and what games could do for me. And it's not to say that all elements of the original Shenmue have aged well. And I think my nostalgia for that game, particularly after replaying it, and I did play through it at least the first game entirely when it came out as the HD re-release, it forced me to reevaluate my nostalgia for that game. Because, you know, I absolutely loved at the time the sense of discovery. I really appreciated how it let me be a virtual tourist in its world above all else. And it, you know, didn't necessarily seek to engage the player on the same frame as every other game at the time. I mean, the verbs were completely redefined. You weren't necessarily fighting everything. You weren't necessarily platforming. You weren't necessarily puzzle solving all the time. It had some of that, but for all intents and purposes, it was redefining how I can spend time in a world and what I can draw from it beyond just that that gameplay loop or action centric or even just the cinematic presentation. I could just be in a world. I could just look at stuff. I could just pick up capsule toys. I could drink sodas. I could just follow people around on their daily schedules. The fact that the game lent itself to all of those possibilities was just so unique and novel at the time, and nothing ever had done that before. And so I think at this point, when we get to Shenmue 3, and it's really seeking to just be more retrospective and pay homage to those things that we loved about Shenmue without kind of forging its own path forward and innovating in its own ways, that's kind of my biggest fear, and probably one of the reasons I need to just take a step back, see it as an indie game that doesn't necessarily have the resources to, you know, let Yu Suzuki and EaseNet advance or continue their vision. It's not like they're going to, you know, with whatever budget that game has, they're not going to be able to just completely upend our perception of games again, because the original did that and other games have done that since. And I think it is, as you said, Nuno, it is operating more or less as a relic of its time. And I think it's important, at least for me personally, to get the most out of that, to just keep that in mind and not expect that game to be as ambitious as its lineage.
Exactly. I mean, as long as it's a fun game to play and it continues the storyline of Shenmue, I think, for a lot of people that would do it, but you know, a lot of critics nowadays and people are kind of a little bit more harsh to game expectations, but you know, you never know. Maybe people might curb their enthusiasm a bit and sort of understand that, but you know, the game media is always kind of fickle, so we'll have to see.
Yeah, so with all of that, with a lot of the talk we had about aspects of Sega fandom that were referenced at E3, with Panzer Dragoon Remake and Shenmue 3. Beyond that, though, I mean, are there any other Sega or Sega-adjacent announcements or games that you guys want to talk about before we close the cast?
All right. Well, I think before we really wrap up, I think we should talk about the giant elephant in the room and one of the biggest Sega announcements, which is Cyberpunk 2077. All right, let's get into the discussion. No, I'm just joking. the Phantasy Star Online 2 is actually announced after 8 years to finally be coming to the West. Like, I mean, it's been so long. I remember my first game journalism thing on this now defunct website. I talked about the announcement of Phantasy Star Online 2 and how I hoped it came to the West, which it never did initially, which is, I think, in 12, I think, that announcement was made that the game came out. So it's been since then. So, I mean, and we're finally getting it not only on the Xbox and PC, but it's been also announced to be coming to the PS4 and Switch as well, which I'm pretty excited for. That was just announced this morning, I believe, when I was looking on my phone. So that's going to be pretty cool. What I understand is that it's going to be, initially it's going to be Xbox One and PC, but eventually it'll end up on all the platforms, so PS4, Switch, and of course the Ouya. No, I'm just joking. It's not coming to that one.
The Ouya port is...
Isn't the Ouya officially dead by now? Was it by the manufacturer?
Yeah, no, it's just a dumb joke, but... But you know, it's coming to pretty much everything, and I'm kind of excited for that. I mean, me and my friend made a pact that we're gonna be playing the heck out of it, and the best part about it is that it's gonna be free to play, so it's not gonna be subscription based. I imagine it'll be, oh, you pay how much for the game, and sort of like Guild Wars, and you get the full game. But I haven't been really well versed in keeping up on how Phantasy Star Online's doing their marketplaces, so maybe we'll have to buy some sort of currency or something, or maybe it'll be, oh, you just pay for the game and you get everything and just grind it out.
That would be nice.
Well, I've actually played Phantasy Star Online 2 already, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. I was waiting for it to come out in the West, and it never did, and a lot of fans got tired waiting, and they basically made a fan-made translation patch. So you could actually, even though it's a server-based game, so it's an online game, you have to connect with servers, but they managed to find some way to still patch the text in the game to English. But still, you had to make a Japanese account on Sega's website, and to register an account you had as part of the inscription page, of the registered page, I mean, you had to solve a Japanese captcha with hiragana characters, which was very fun. And you obviously had to change your keyboard on Windows to Japanese to input the letters. And to this day, I still receive Japanese emails that I don't know how to unsubscribe from. And when I finally got to play the game, because it's an online game, because it's being updated constantly, only around half of the text was in English. The rest was still in Japanese because the game was just constantly being updated. And that included some of the tutorial missions, the quests that I couldn't finish because I didn't know what the fuck I was supposed to do. Still, I managed to leave the central hub and get out in the field and kill a bunch of monsters until I got stuck because I just couldn't progress anymore without doing something that I didn't know what. So I had a lot of fun with the game. The starting area really reminded myself of the starting area of Phantasy Star Online for Dreamcast, because it's also a forest type area and some of the monsters looked really similar to the ones in the original game. So it was really great for the 15 minutes that I was able to play. The rest of the time I was stuck in the hub because I couldn't know what the hell I was supposed to do. So I eventually quit, but I always wanted to play the game again, or proper this time. So finally, it's been announced to be released in the USA. It actually hasn't been announced for Europe. Only, even though they claim it's going to be released in the West, the official statement only mentions the United States of America. So I hope I can at least create an American account. I mean, I already managed to create a Japanese one, so how hard could it be to create an American account?
We have all that, the capture for the Japanese katana, katakana, so you're going to have to struggle your way through that. It's like you just automatically switch to the Japanese. It's like, we detected that you're not in the U.S., so we're just to set your language to Japanese. Have fun.
Yeah, I just hope they don't block foreign IPs, because goddamn, I really want to play this game.
Yeah, I don't, to be honest, Nuno, knowing your know-how, I don't see you having a problem getting that up, especially if you have a VPN. I think you'll be able to.
I don't. So if they block my IP addresses, if they can detect my region from my IP, then I'm out of luck. I don't have a VPN.
Well, I mean, it's easy to get one. Yeah, but the point is that it's come to the West. I can't see it not coming to Europe. And even if it doesn't, I don't see people having an issue with all these VPNs to be able to access it. So I'm really excited for it. I'm going to be playing it day one. Hopefully you guys will too, and maybe we'll do like a Shiro Junkyard Clan, or have like a live stream.
Cool. Oh, that'd be awesome.
Because I'd be down. Like, we just do like live streams. Like, we'll do like, oh, once a month the Shiro and Junkyard guys will do raids, and we'll live stream it on the Facebook pages, and like do special like guest things where you could be included in it or something like that. I don't know. I'm just throwing out spitballs, but I'd be 100% down to do that, because I know I'm going to be playing a lot. I know you guys probably playing a lot too, right?
I hope to. I mean, I love the original, although I didn't play it online as much as I probably wanted to, just because I kind of played it mostly after the fact, and I didn't have the... So on Dreamcast, you know, I didn't necessarily have everything rigged up to be able to play that online again, although now I could, so... Yeah, we'll have to see. But yes, have they announced if that's going to be crossplay between Xbox and PC and presumably other consoles later?
I guarantee probably Xbox and PC. I couldn't see it not, especially since it's using the same Azure servers, whatever it's called. I can never pronounce Azure properly, even at work. It's like,
I think they actually did announce crossplay compatibility, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, yeah. So, I made a good assumption on that one, but between Switch and PS4, we'll have to see. I know PS4 has been really kicking back against that, so I'm not 100% sure how that's going to work. Maybe they'll get the stick out of their butts and we'll be able to get some crossplay, but I can see the Switch getting it, though, because it already has it for Fortnite, I believe, and Minecraft.
I want to say that that Sony has at least come around to some extent following the backlash of the whole Fortnite thing. I know that there are at least a couple of other games that I think they've announced that they'll be allowing cross-play with. So, and then also, there was that whole announcement with Sony using Microsoft's servers to do a lot of its streaming in the future as part of the next generation. All right. Anything else? I think we had Judgment. I guess that's the other thing that Sega had probably, I think they showed a little bit more of at E3. And I'm honestly trying to keep myself in the dark a little bit on that one. It's essentially a Yakuza-like game. It's more of a detective buddy cop kind of story that's set within the same universe and actually the same neighborhood of Kamurocho as the Yakuza games. What I have seen, or the little bit I've seen of it so far, it looks really cool. And it does have a lot of the similar over-the-top, just crazy action sequences and beat-em-up combat, but also it has a lot more mechanics for how you can spy on people or look at evidence and do detective-y things. So I'm really looking forward to that, but I'm also trying to limit my exposure just because I want to be as surprised as I can be. And I think that actually comes out in a couple of weeks. Is it the 25th? I don't know if either of you might have a better idea.
I had heard nothing about it, but I'll definitely play it. I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that might be the next game I get into. Yeah, June 25th on the PS4.
I think we're pretty much good. We covered everything we wanted to do, and they didn't say anything about new Streets of Rage, so we can skip that. All right. I think we'll just close it out.
Sounds good. Let's plug Shiro. Where can people find you, Pat?
You can find us at the www.SegaSaturnShiro.com. Go to our Facebook page at PlaySegaSaturn, our Twitter at PlaySegaSaturn, and just our podcaster at Podian, or you can search us up on iTunes, Spotify, really any place you can get podcasts. I guarantee you could probably listen to it. Even Google Play, I got some on that. So if you're a stickler for that, go listen to our podcast. We've got some cool videos coming up. We got some interviews that are coming up in the near future. So we've been sort of silent just because we've been so busy with our lives and prepping stuff, but we got some stuff coming up. So keep an eye open. And of course I've been doing like fight stick design. So I have to plug myself. If you want to check that out at the Beckett Versus. I do a bunch of fight sticks, so I did a Knights one I'm working on. And
yeah, I just saw that, I saw that a couple of days ago. It looks awesome.
Yeah, so I do it for a bunch of different sticks. If you want one, just hit me up and I'll do it for you just because it's fun. I actually want to announce I'm actually going to do a Panzer Dragoon one for the Hori Rap 4 just to celebrate the game's announcement. So expect one of those coming soon, and I'll put those designs up. And you can download them for free. Just download the PSD and go to any of your fight stick art printing companies and just print that out. Just give them the design. You can just get that print out for yourself, throw it on your stick, and you're good to go. But yeah, that's about it. Check that out at Beckett Versus and on Facebook. And yeah, that's about it for plugs.
Awesome. Yeah, and I guess we don't really talk about Saturn Junkyard here, but yeah, we have the blog. That's what we were founded as, Simon. I think that was, 12, 13 years ago now that Simon founded that. So definitely go to SaturnJunkyard.com. There's just tons of articles and all sorts of stuff and links.
And you guys got new writers too, right?
Yeah.
New writers.
Yeah, we have a few people now
Yeah, no, because I know one of them actually is in Arizona, and I got plugged on this local gaming zone, the gaming zone in Arizona. They plugged one of your writers, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, no, sorry. It was 1UP Games. Sorry, that did it.
Oh, okay. Wow. We are also on Twitter, at Saturn Junkyard. I have a Twitter as well, at The Virtua Schlub. So feel free to follow us there and keep in touch there. Otherwise, we have a Facebook group, which maybe a lot of people who listen to this podcast are already part of, but just in case, if you just go onto Facebook and type in the Saturn Junkyard or Saturn Junkyard, should come right up. It's a pretty awesome community, and yeah, we just are always open for new people to come in and share their enthusiasm about the Sega and Sega Saturn and all of that wonderful stuff. And yeah, well, you know, I think with that, I'd like to thank everybody again for tuning in. And we haven't really figured out what a good outro catchphrase would be. So I'm just going to
keep Sega in. No, keep Sega in. Keep junkyarding. Keep ripping, tearing up that junkyard. Keep tearing up the streets. Keep destroy Nintendo with hammers.
Yeah, all right.